Welcome back to Administrative Static, and I am joined once again by my colleague Carol Rollins, who last week discussed efforts to inquire into crypto mining energy use, and we have another crypto matter she spotted that we find interesting. It's in the matter of Shapeshift AG, United States of America before the Securities and Exchange Commission. Carol, why is this a curious matter?
You know, I've always told people for a long time, if you want to practice constitutional law, you got to be doing admin law. If you want to be doing admin law right now, you probably should be looking at crypto. It's an unregulated space that, and we've seen this many times over the years. We certainly saw it with the FTC probably 5-10 years ago in data and privacy security, that where there's an unregulated industry, agencies fall all over themselves to regulate that industry to cement their power. It's like a power begets power.
Without congressional action.
Without congressional action. And I think that that's clearly what's going on in crypto right now. I mean, there's an open debate. Are these commodities that fall under the CFTC? Are these securities that fall under the Securities and Exchange Commission? I mean, that's an ongoing debate. Congress is having it. CFTC commissioner was before the House yesterday.
What's the CFTC?
Is the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, which is sort of, you know, they do gold, grain,
wheat, oranges, all these trading places.
Yes, yes, items, as it were, as opposed to securities, which are a different sort of avenue. And so what's going on in crypto right now is there's like a handful of things where there's a lot of regulation by enforcement, which is predominantly what the SEC is engaging now. They
explain to our listeners, what's legislation by enforcement?
Instead of passing a regulation or a piece of legislation through, you know, standard processes, what the agencies tend to do for legislation through enforcement or regulation through enforcement is they dust off an old statute, here the Exchange Act of 1934, and say, aha, this is essentially Chairman Gensler's exact thing. We have always had this power. They knew in 1934 these are, you know, investment contracts and we can regulate them as such. And so I could see your face.
Securities can be anything.
Yeah, yeah. And so typically what you're seeing the SEC enforce crypto right now under tends to be a view that they're investment contracts. And so that varies from case to case, token to token, across platforms. But generally that's the view, and certainly Chairman Gensler's view that we have always had this power. We will always have this power. We're not doing anything new. Obviously, folks that operate in the crypto space have very different views of that. Not only are they actively defending cases, they've brought some declaratory judgment acts to ask courts to declare sort of the state of the law as to crypto assets and tokens. And so what we tend to see in this legislation by enforcement or regulation by enforcement is it's a way for...
So that's what this Shapeshifter case
yes,
is.
I would absolutely classify it as that. Is that it's a way for an agency to sort of secure some legitimacy in its position and have something to point to and say, look, they settled with us when we accused them of X, Y, and Z. Therefore, X, Y, and Z might be true. Now, we can all follow the logical fallacy in that, but this happens all the time. So in the instance of Shapeshift, some of the things that caught mine, I think would catch your attention as not just a litigator, but somebody who's litigated against the SEC specifically, is that they ceased to operate in 2021.
Shapeshift,
yeah. And so, you know, they stopped operating in 2021. And you and I, immediately in my mind, I thought, well, they would never get an injunction. And as we know, agencies love injunctions, especially the independent agencies. They love nothing more than to run into court and get what we call an obey the law injunction that says the agency must obey the law, or, you know, you, Target, must obey the law. You've been violating it. I can tell you, looking at these facts right here, this is the no admit, no deny findings of fact. You would never get an injunction on these facts. The company doesn't exist. It's non-operational. It ceased the alleged, you know, violative actions. And so, you know, that stood out to me. So that's also probably why it's in an administrative proceeding. We talk about administrative proceedings here at NCLA all the time and all sort of the due process problems that develop by having the SEC or one of its ALJs be both the prosecutor the judge and then the appellate court in some ways. And so we have that. And then the other third thing that this clearly implies is we always talk about our gag cases. The SEC has a rule that if you do a no admit, no deny consent, that you are then gagged from ever sort of causing even a shadow of a doubt that what the SEC's version of facts is true. And certainly I have not seen a gag in this, but we know it's a no admit, no deny settlement. We know it's a consent. And they use this tricky language. This is something that Peggy Little, senior counsel here at NCLA, has picked up on. They call it the respondent's offer of settlement. And I could tell you from looking at hundreds of these, it is not usually the respondent's offer of settlement. It is the SEC's drafted settlement with all of the language they like. And then they say, take it or leave it. And so it has all those sort of administrative dirty tools that we like to say the SEC uses to push people into positions. And I think that this one was an easy target for them because, you know, the company's done and they can just sort of get a settlement agreement because it's probably, you know, in some instances, cheaper to sign a consent than it is to go fight these.
I mean, well, in some instances.
Oh, most instances. I mean, certainly, you know, the public data that we've cited in our gag cases is, and I think it was Nelson Obis had said this, it cost $12 million to defend his SEC case a few years ago. We've seen estimates that the pre-enforcement, just the pre-enforcement, this is often called the Wells process, $1.5 to $2 million. That's before anything is filed. And so you can see how businesses sort of tend to be willing to settle. I think the civil penalty here ended up being about $200,000, right, which is like, I mean, that's a lot, right? I mean, that's like a house for most Americans. Right. But, you know, it is just one of those things that it's a tool that I think we're hoping that this Supreme Court term is going to get substantially cut back.
And the other thing they do, you know what, it does remind me, all this jockeying for what they can do, is the way that the FTC got its disgorgement powers that were eventually turned down in AMG 40 years later. But what they do is they take on somebody who has no reason to fight and who oftentimes isn't even represented or is represented by a single practitioner or somebody. And so they bring their whole panoply of their ideas of why they have jurisdiction and why they have new powers and why this is perfectly fine. And then they get an agreement and they get another agreement, same kind of thing. And then maybe they get a default judgment.
I was going to say they do it by default.
They love defaults.
And then they come and all these end up in sort of the public record and they go to other courts and they cite those and they just sort of often leave out the part that says this is a default judgment or the party settled on X and they agreed that the court would determine, say, disgorgement. And so, yeah, I mean, this happens all the time. And it's one of the things that certainly as, you know, doing the work that we do, particularly when we're on the defense side, drives me absolutely insane because there is a misconception among the courts that you can always fight. I don't know. Do you have $200,000 laying around? I don't know if that's a proper question to ask somebody,
exactly.
You know, it's one of those things where
your lawyer becomes kind of the SEC's ally in that it bills you every month.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So, but and in any event, so they do this, and it's a little bit like the crooked boxing mob thing where they set up their fighter they want to win and then they have a palooka that he just gets knocked down. He's going to get knocked down. Mm-hmm. And then they go, oh, this is a great fighter. It's the same thing because then now they say, what? Our theory's great. We keep winning.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny here is there's two dissenting votes on this decision from two of the commissioners. And they it's titled today's episode as the crypto world turns. And, you know, one of the things that SEC has been saying for years is, well, just come in and register. Well, there's a couple problems with that, right? I mean, one, you can really only register if you're truly a securities broker. There's like an open question of whether or not these are securities. Some of these are treated as commodities. They may be registered as commodities traders. As the CFTC chair said to The Hill yesterday, well, if you're registered as commodities and it turns out they're securities and you're out of compliance with CFTC. I mean, talk about a step in the wrong direction by even an inch and you've just fallen down the hole of massive civil liability, right? And so what these two commissioners said is like this sort of changing, shifting model isn't helpful for anybody. There's no clarity in this space right now about what does or doesn't trigger the law. And they put forth this really interesting, this is the as the crypto world turns, and they say, you know, they put in this, you know, dialogue between folks of like, between the SEC and some sort of future company that may want to come in and do this. And they're like, you know, the industry is like, we have questions. They said, well, you know, did you do this? Did you do this? We think that you should look at this report. You know, if you're concerned, go have a lawyer look at it. And they're like, well, the lawyer has more questions.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that that's one of those things of this is just a byproduct of when you do regulation by enforcement, there's no clarity in the law whatsoever. That creates due process problems. I mean, I think, like I said, you know, administrative law and crypto are going to be tied together for the foreseeable future.
And unless Congress acts, I mean, they could very easily say, define what a crypto token is, whatever they are.
Token asset, yeah.
So define what that is and then say who has jurisdiction over it and put it in whatever box Congress wants to put it in.
Yeah, and one of the two commissioners probably could be very sad about the outcome of that.
Yeah. And I'm surprised the FTC hasn't.
They don't give them any ideas, John.
So, but in any event, you'll be watching for more of these because it is the sort of thing. Now, is there this sort of thing going on at the commodities board too?
There are some open cases before the CFTC, but they seem to be taking a much better approach in thinking through these types of problems.
I got it. Well, thank you for spotting this, and we'll be following this issue. Thanks, Kara.
Thank you.